we discussed yesterday, or the day before yesterday, about the... Are you able to see from there? So we discussed about... about the glory of transcendental knowledge. So first, its glorious effect, that is, it will make one attached to Krishna. Second is its expansiveness, nothing more will be there to be known. And third is its rarity. Now, after describing this, Krishna will start giving the knowledge. So what is the knowledge? Earlier, when Krishna talked about jnana, he was talking about nishkam karma yoga, or how to act in this world, how to act without getting entangled. But in the fifth chapter, there was a crucial transition in 5.17, where the focus shifted from not just not getting bound, but to getting liberated. And by Atma Gyan, one can stay free from bondage. But to stay free from bondage to further karma that one is doing. But to become free from all karmic bondage which one has acquired in the past, one has to have Paramatma Gyan. And that was how there's a crucial transition there. So now when Krishna is going to give Gyan over here, he is going to give Gyan about how the seeker can know him. And by that knowledge, not only stay free from bondage, but positively attain liberation. They are two different concepts. Staying free from bondage and attaining liberation. They are not equivalent. For example, if a patient is in a hospital, then he has gone to the hospital because he has some infection. But while he's in the hospital, because there are so many other sick people, he might catch some other infection. So all of us have done some bad karma because of which we are bound in material existence. But now, when we do action, that will bind us further. So by acting with detachment, with Atma Gyan, we protect ourselves from doing further entangling karma. It's like a person who goes to the hospital, he makes sure that he doesn't get any further infection. But preventing further infection is not the same as curing existing infection. So, curing existing infection means cutting off all the knots of karma, including whatever past karma one has done. So, that is possible only by the practice of bhakti. So, for practicing bhakti, one has to have proper knowledge of Bhagavan, who is the object of bhakti. So, that's why Krishna will give knowledge about himself. And he has hinted that also. He says, Kashchin mam veti tatvata. Very few people know me in truth. What that means is, that the knowledge which he is going to give is about himself. He is the ultimate goal of that knowledge. So he will start by describing how whatever we see in the world is a manifestation of his energies. Bhumira ponalo vayu.
Bhumira ponalo vayu.
Khammano buddhirevacha.
Khammano buddhirevacha.
Ahankaraitiyam me.
Ahankaraitiyam me.
Bhinna prakriti ashtadha.
Bhinna prakriti ashtadha.
So ashtadha, eight. Bhinna prakriti, eight energies. And these are bhumir apo nalo vayu kham mano buddhir. Now out of these, four are gross, three are subtle, and one is on the borderline of gross and subtle. So although ether, it is classified as gross matter, but it is not gross, perceivable by our gross senses. The only way we perceive ether is by the fact that it acts as a medium for the transmission of sound. Apart from that, we can perceive air and feel it. I can touch form, earth, I can touch it. So like that, there are different ways in which by different senses I can perceive it. But ether, I can perceive it not by its own properties, but by its ability to convey something else, that is sound vibration. So that's why ether is not like the other elements. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually, if you look at modern material science, comprises these 10 items and nothing more. What are the 10 items? he says, the five jajantic creations and the five sense objects. So this is what science studies. So actually speaking, in the Western intellectual history, there was two systems of classifying matter. There is the elemental theory of matter and there is the atomic theory of matter. And both are significantly, even fundamentally different. So we also, in our science, whatever we have studied, we primarily studied the atomic theory of matter. So what is the difference between the elemental and the atomic theory? The atomic theory is based on the idea that ultimately everything is theories, elemental and atomic. The elemental theory was there in Western intellectual thought, but eventually it was removed from the Western intellectual thought. I'll explain why. And the atomic theory. So when we have the elemental theory, we observe the material world around us and try to categorize it according to the properties that we observe with our senses. So actually the elemental theory is classified according to phenomenological. This may seem a little philosophical. Phenomenological properties. Whereas atomic theory classifies matter according to physical properties. So, what is the difference between physical and phenomenological properties? It's a tongue twister. Phenomena is okay. When you come to phenomenological. So, and then the famous experiment, probably apocryphal. Apocryphal means it's exaggerated, not a real experiment. What happened was Galileo, he went on top of some tower. Did I mention that in an earlier class? No. So, he went on top of a tower and he threw a ball, a metallic ball, say like a base metal, like say iron, and he threw a golden ball. Now nobody will throw a golden ball, so it's unlikely that the experiment happened. But whatever it was, basically two widely divergent materials he took and he threw them down. And then it was widely thought at that time that because gold is more precious, gold is more heavy in terms of its financial value, so golden ball would fall first up. But then they found that actually both balls hit the ground at the same time. So that was what gave Galileo a realization. The scientists also get their versions of realizations. So what he felt is that for the scientific study of matter, so the idea of gold being beautiful, the gold being precious, it's not a scientifically quantifiable idea. It's not a scientifically, I say gold is beautiful. How is it beautiful? What do you mean by beauty? It's not scientifically quantifiable. So they felt that these are phenomenological properties. For example, if I say this kheer is delicious, this kheer which I ate is delicious. Now the deliciousness of the kheer is something which is perceived by the senses, and that is not measurable. On the other hand, if I tell this kheer was made when you take this much quantity of rice, this much quantity of milk, and this much quantity of sugar, then that is quantifiable and measurable. So what happened was, for scientific study of matter, the quantifiability and measurability was very important. Because if things are measurable, then they are manipulable. That was their idea. So therefore, at that time, science started feeling that whatever we perceive with our senses, now to some extent we can perceive the weight with our senses also, we can perceive the height and the breadth and the length. But when we see an object, that's not what first strikes us. You know, if I see a beautiful painting, you know, maybe the size is not the thing that strikes me. But what strikes me is the aesthetic beauty. So the aesthetic aspect was completely it's something which is perceived only by through sense perception. So now both physical and phenomenological properties are perceived through senses only. But within the senses, for example, somebody may say this kheer is delicious, and somebody else may say that this kheer is too sweet. And somebody else, why is there so little sugar they have put in? They should put more. So when we talk about properties, phenomenological properties like taste, color, and all these properties, fragrance, these are not exact, they are something which are subjective. You know, somebody may feel like some people put perfumes on their bodies. When we go here, why is it so artificial? It's so artificial. Other people feel, actually, you know, it's very good perfume, you put more. So different people, these are subjective things. So science has to object on objectivity. They said, therefore, we remove all subjective aspects and physical properties focus on. Physical properties, length, breadth, mass, speed, composition, all those are what they focused on. So now Krishna, when he is talking to us right now, he is focusing on matter as it is. So that's why, now if you study the creation that is given in the Bhagavatam, as well as, I'll give you Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita doesn't give creation per se, it assumes creation. And that is compared, the process of creation is compared with the process of, with the level of rasas. It's like, you know, the most evolved rasa is Madhura Rasa. So Madhura Rasa includes all the previous rasas plus something else. So similarly, in the process of creation, it is described that, say, the most evolved element is, say, earth. So earth contains the properties of all the other elements plus something else. So like that, the modality of creation is assumed in Chaitanya Charitamrita. But the point is that all these elements, they are characterized according to what all sense objects they include. So ether is associated with sense object. All of you know this, isn't it? Correct. So, yeah, I just write this down so that it will be easier. So element and sense object. Let's start with ether. So ether is associated with sound. Which are the other elements? Okay, so then, what comes after ether? So now, the word Kama as well as the word Akash, both are used for ether. Sometimes there is confusion which comes because of this. Just like, so then, air. So air has which characteristic? Yes?
Correct.
So it's, this is quite foundational. So air has, then earth, water, fire. Fire has form. I'll explain this correlation. Let's complete this first. Then water has taste, yes. And earth has fragrance. Rasoham Upsukamte Krishna will speak a little bit later, so we are discussing that now itself. And then he says, Punyo Gandha Prithivyam Cha. Punyo Gandha means fragrance. Gandha is fragrance. So we have Sugandha. So each of these elements is the medium by which a particular sense of object is expressed and experienced. That means that without the presence of ether, sound cannot manifest itself in the world. And after sound manifests, for us to experience sound also, ether has to be present. Similarly, what now air, we can literally understand when air flows, we feel it by senses of touch. Now, in the Vedanta Sutra, it's elaborately described that actually each of the elements contain portion of all the other elements. It's called Panchanikarana. Panchanikarana means you take one element, divide it into five parts, and then, so we will have 20-20% of each. Then take 80% of one element, and then within the 80% of that element, actually take 5% of all the remaining food. So each element, it's a complex thing. If you don't understand, don't bother about it right now. We may discuss this in 13.6 and 7 if you have time. That's one more place where Krishna will talk about Sankhya. So the point here is that each of these elements is primarily a vehicle for a particular sense object to be expressed and experienced. So Krishna is analyzing the world in terms of these elements. And he is telling, these are all my energies. And beyond these five gross elements, Mahabhutani Ahankara, Krishna uses the word Mahabhuta for this in the 13th chapter. So apart from that, there is mind, intelligence and ego. So these are all my material energies. And apart from these, there is the spiritual energy. So What Krishna Prabhupada explains over here is, if you see, these are the manifestations of physical, sound, touch, form, taste and smell. Material science comprises these 10 items and nothing more. Study the five gross elements and the associated sense objects. That's all that science studies. And then Prabhupada explains, even subtle matter is not studied by them. What to speak of other things. So, in the Sankhya atheistic philosophy, they study only the 24 elements. The Sankhya theistic philosophy, they study these elements plus their connection with Krishna. So what Krishna is giving over here is the theistic Sankhya, not the atheistic Sankhya. And this is elaborated further in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Much, much more elaborated. There are lots of chapters over there. So here Krishna uses the word Bhinna. Bhinna means separated. So how is this material energy separated from Krishna? Because it is, at one level it is inferior. There are two characters Krishna described. Actually, next characters of apara, it will describe in the para and apara prakriti. So it is inferior and it is separated. It is inferior because it doesn't manifest consciousness. It is separated because it does not exist in the spiritual world. What is in the spiritual world is directly connected with Krishna. So it is disconnected from Krishna. So Prabhupada was asked by one younger Prabhupada, if God is so beautiful, God is so good, why is this world so bad? Why is it so evil? So Srila Prabhupada gave the reply, you are beautiful, but your stool is so ugly. So, because you are ugly. But why? Because it is your separated energy. So, this world is Krishna's separated energy. So, Prabhupada gave another example of separated energy is a recorded voice of a particular person. The recorded voice would not have been there if the person or not there and the person had not spoken. At the same time, from a functional point of view, from the origin point of view, that recording has to come from the person. But from the functional point of view, it acts more or less independently of the person. So does the world act independently of Krishna? It's not entirely independent, but Krishna is not in a moment-to-moment intervening in the administration of the world. Krishna has dedicated the administration of the world to, at one level, the devatas, at another level, to his manifestation of Lakshmi Daksha Vishnu. Krishna himself is not directly, on a moment-to-moment basis, intervening in the world. So, Binna Prakriti Rashtada, these are my separated energies. And after this, so till now, the whole vision of the material world was, it's a place of Maya, and has to become free from it. But now, the material world is being re-shown as, reinterpreted as the arena of Krishna's energy. So, I mentioned this yesterday that, you know, there is the material world, we see the place as a place of enjoyment. Remember, three is enjoyment, entanglement, and engagement. So, karmis see the world as a place of enjoyment. Jnanis see it as a place of entanglement. And devotees see it as a place of engagement. So, we can see it as a place of engagement only when we see its connection with Krishna. So, Krishna is revealing that connection to Arjuna. So, then we will tell about the other energy. Apareyam tasvanyam. Prakritim vidhime param.
Prakritim vidhime param.
Jiva-bhuta-mahabaho.
Vyayedam-dharite-jagat.
So, apareyam itas tvanyam. This is my apara prakriti. So, actually, this is continuing on from the previous words. This itas means, it's referring to the previous, what was described in the previous words. Apareyam. Tvanyam. That is another one also. Prakritim vidhime param. That was apara, this is para. So, in the Upanishad, this is also talked about apara vidya and para vidya. It's correlated matter and spirit. Jiva Bhuta. Krishna is referring to Jiva Bhuta as aggregate. Jiva Bhuta. Mahabahu Arjuna. What are they saying? Vyayedam dharyate jagat. So actually, Krishna is saying they are maintaining the material world. So this is, in one sense, a little bit sarcastic. What Krishna is saying is, it is like saying the prisoners are maintaining the prison. Actually, how it is? Yes, it is true. The prisoners are maintaining the presence in the prison in the sense that it is because if the prisoners had not been there, the prison would not have been required. But Krishna will later on say that actually it is not that they are maintainers in the sense that they know how to maintain it. Krishna will explain that in the later section, that he is the essence, he is the underlying unifying principle who is maintaining. But here it is for them that this material world exists. So Krishna is talking, first he is talking about material energy, and he introduces the spiritual energy. Then he is describing the connection of the spiritual material energy, that this, the material energy, the material world that is created, jagat, that is maintained for their sake. And then Srila Prabhupada in this verse quotes about how this living entity is apareyam, prakriti. He is a living entity, he is not the supreme lord. Quotes in the Bhagavatam that if the living entities had been supreme, then they would not have to surrender to him to gain liberation. Therefore, it proves that they are not supreme. Now, after describing this energy, Krishna is here. To make the point more emphatic, he will say that both of these have their source and sustenance in me. Etad yoni bhutani.
Etad yoni bhutani.
Sarvani tyupadharaya.
Sarvani tyupadharaya.
Aham krishnasya jagataha.
Aham krishnasya jagataha.
Prabhava pralayastatha.
Prabhava pralayastatha.
So, etad yoni bhutani. All these living beings, yoni bhutani means created beings, beings who are having yonis, that their sources, they are all coming from me. Aham kritsnasya. The word kritsnasya is different from krishnasya. Krishna is belonging to Krishna. Kritsnasya is everything. Kritsnasya, everything, whatever is there in this world, jagataha, prabhava pralayastatha. I am the source and I am the ultimate rest. So that means, Krishna is saying that I am the underlying principle for everything. From me everything emanates, in me everything is maintained, and to me everything returns. So now this point is talking about what Krishna's role is with respect to this world. And the next verse, Krishna will explain another point. Matta parataram nanyad.
Matta parataram nanyad.
Kinchidasti dhananjaya.
Kinchidasti dhananjaya.
Mai sarvamidam brotam.
Mai sarvamidam brotam.
Sutre manigadaiva.
Sutre manigadaiva.
So, in this verse, actually two distinct points are being talked about. First verse is talking about one point, second verse is talking about another point. Matta parataram nanyad kinchidasti dhananjaya. There is no truth superior to me. Nothing is higher than me. So we can see these material elements in the world. We can see all the material phenomena. We can see all the living entities. Beyond all of them, the highest, whatever is there, highest is Krishna. So at one level, the previous verses were telling that Krishna is, everything is Krishna's energy. Mm-hmm. Krishna is saying that, yes, I am the highest truth. So he is the Lord of the energies, and he is, I said, the most real reality. He's real, and these energies are also real. But they are subordinate. He is the highest reality. So the first part of this verse is talking about his material energy. Now he says that he is the highest truth. After explaining how he is the highest truth, now he will explain that what is his relationship with the material world person. One is, he said, they are all my energies. I am independent of them, I am the highest truth. He is staying in A and B of this world. In C and D, he is telling that I permeate this world. I enter into this world. So you remember we discussed in our Ishopanishad about how there are two aspects of God's relationship with the world. There is immanence and transcendence. So Matta Parataram Nanit Kinchitas Dhananjaya to some extent talks about the transcendence. He's beyond everything. And so Baldev Vidyabhushan has a strong dig at Shankaracharya in this purport. I'll explain that. So he quotes this. Relationship of Krishna with the world. So, Mattaha Bharatana, there is no truth higher than me. So, the Mayavadis have the idea of a Sagun Brahma and Nirgun Brahma. They say actually Brahman ultimately is formless, shapeless, qualityless, and that is the absolute reality. And then, that Brahman manifests sometimes in this world as avatars. And Krishna is one such avatar. So, then he asks this question. And if Krishna is saying there is no truth higher than me, then who is this speaking? Is it Sagun Brahma or is it Nirgun Brahma? If it is Sagun Brahma speaking, then according to your philosophy, Sagun Brahma is a lower reality. So then what Krishna is saying, there is no reality higher than me. And that means that Krishna is actually refuting your philosophy. On the other hand, if Krishna is Nirgun Brahma, then that means there is form and personality in the Nirgun Brahma also. So what he says is, Nirgun Brahma doesn't mean formless, qualityless. It means devoid of material forms and material qualities. So according to what he describes is actually this conception of Sagun Brahma. There is no such thing as Sagun Brahma talked about in the Upanishads. Because Brahman surely has qualities, but they are all transcendental qualities. There is no concept of Brahman material qualities. He says, Krishna is pointing to his chest and he is saying that there is no truth higher than me. So later on he will tell how Brahman is subordinate to me. Brahmano hi patishtam. But here is the first time Krishna is very unequivocally asserting his supremacy over everything else. And sutre manigana eva. So just like we can have a necklace in which everything is unified by an invisible thread. So now interestingly, Baldev Vidyabhushan qualifies this analogy. He explains that actually, if we take this analogy in and of itself, the thread has no existence apart from the necklace. Isn't it? Once the thread becomes a part of the necklace, the full thread gets covered inside the necklace. And the thread does not have any self-existence apart from the necklace. So, is it like that with God? That if God, at one level, this example conveys the idea that God is the underlying unifying principle of existence. Let's say the thread is the underlying unifying principle of the necklace. But then the thread does not exist separate from the necklace. So similarly, this example would convey, if it is taken as the complete truth, it would convey that actually God has no existence apart from the world. But if we look at it, what has Krishna said in just the previous verses? He says, all these are my energies, they come from me. That means the previous verses have talked that his existence is separate from them. So the idea is, Krishna has a self-existence, and from him the material energies come, and then he also enters into the material energies. So this verse has to be seen in the overall flow. Ultimately, no metaphor can convey the reality of the absolute truth completely. But this verse, this example, primarily conveys the idea of the immanence of God. I pervade everything. So now from 7.8 to 7.11, the next four verses, Krishna will explain how he pervades the world. How he is the essence of everything in this world. Sutre Mani Ganayo, what he has described, how that is actually played out, he will describe in the next verse. Any questions till now? So, Srila Prabhupada is saying this very interesting thing. Prabhupada is saying over here that actually there is a common controversy absolute truth is personal or impersonal. And very clear as far as the Bhagavad Gita is concerned that he is personal, he is not impersonal. Prabhupada goes into some Upanishadic polemics over there. Upanishadic polemics he goes through. And then, now you can read that yourself. We will focus on the theme over here. So now let's start with Krishna talking about how he is the essence of everything. Rasoham apsu kaunteya.
Rasoham apsu kaunteya.
Prabhashvi shashi suryaya.
Prabhashvi shashi suryaya.
Pranavas sarvavedeshu.
Pranavas sarvavedeshu.
Shabdakhe paurusham rishu.
Shabdakhe paurusham rishu.
So rasoham apsu kaunteya. That I am the taste of water, Prabhashvi Shashi Suryayo. That I am the light of the sun and the moon. Then Pranavah Sarva Vedeshu. All the Vedas, they begin with Pranava. Without the Pranava, the Vedas are considered to be incomplete. Shabda Khe Paurusham Rishu. So, Shabda Khe we discussed. So, two of these are directly the defining characteristics of those elements. Taste is the characteristic of water. And sound is the characteristic of ether. Let's look at the other things. Now, did I discuss in the Ishopanishad class about how sound is the, how water is, Krishna says, I am the taste of water, what it means? I discussed that? No. Now, according to modern science, water is a tasteless liquid. Isn't it? So, if water is a taste, what does taste of water mean? Actually, many times we use similar terms, but the concepts are quite different. Just like we have a concept of atom in science, and we have the concept of Anu and Paramanu in Sankhya and Vaisheshika. So the terms are similar, but the conceptions are very different. The conceptions are very, very different. So similarly, when we talk about taste, what science thinks of as taste and what the Vedic scriptures conceive of as taste, they are two different things. When science talks of taste, what they think is that, okay, this doesn't taste good, you add something to it, then it becomes tasty. For example, this doesn't have sugar in it, put some sugar, then you get taste to it. But within modern science itself, you know how taste emerges from bottom up. Because according to them, everything is made of atoms and molecules. Now, when atoms and molecules, they themselves don't have any taste, they don't have any color, they don't have any fragrance. So just combination of atoms and molecules, when it comes together, when taste emerges, they have no idea. We know that, okay, when the atoms and molecules are arriving in the form of sugar, it has the taste of sweetness. But is it that when the atoms and molecules are arriving in a particular angular combination, that angular combination produces taste? How it comes, they have no idea. So from that word, leave alone how life comes from matter, but how even from atoms, how the material sense objects come, that is incomprehensible. So they have different theories, but ultimately there is no clear understanding. So they have some concept called qualia. They say qualia are the properties of matter, but how those qualia emerge from the subatomic realm, that they don't know. So, although in the both places the word taste that is used is the same, the conceptions are different. So, when the scriptures talk about taste, it is talking about an innate property of water. So, when you talk about the taste of water, it is talking about an innate property of water. That, what does this innate property of water do? It actually makes all other tastes accessible to us. It gives taste to all the objects that we consider tasty. The two features of this taste. Let me explain this. Makes all other tastes accessible to us. So, there are some diseases in which a person cannot secrete saliva. If the tongue cannot secrete saliva, then we can't taste the object only. So it is the presence of liquid, the presence of water, that enables us to taste all objects. And similarly, any object, like we say rukhi chapati, what has happened in that? The liquid has gone out of it, the water has gone out of it, and that's why it becomes tasteless. So the taste in all objects is due to the presence of water. And the capacity for us to taste any object comes because of the presence of water. So that's how the taste is imbued through water. So there are two different conceptions. So the material idea of taste is you add some other object which gives taste to other things. But then how that object that gets that taste, that is not known at all. How that, because that object is made of atoms and molecules. Where does that taste come from? That's not known. That is the Vedic understanding is that actually water has an innate property called taste. And when that water has the capacity for taste, that imbues us, that enables us to experience all other tastes. So from our experiential point of view, the taste is the same. Now for me, when I taste, say, sweet and find it delicious, from the experiential point of view, I don't analyze well. Okay, whether this taste is coming from qualia, or that taste is coming from water, or this is coming from water, I just experience the taste. But from the analytical point of view, which Krishna is talking about over here, he is the taste of water. Now, Paurusham Rishu, I am the ability in man. So actually, Baldev Vidyabhushan is a very interesting answer, Paurusha. He says, Paurusha he defines as the capacity to endeavor. He roughly correlates this with to endeavor means endeavor for spiritual advancement. So, as far as living beings are concerned, all of them have certain abilities. Now, the chameleon has the ability to change its colors and camouflage itself. The cuckoo has the ability to sing very sweetly. So, all living beings have certain abilities. But when he is talking about Paurusha, the ability, what is the paurushatva of a purusha? It is actually the capacity to control one's senses and strive for something higher. So paurusham rishu. I am the ability in man. And in general, a man is defined by his abilities. Even in an ashram, the division is done by his abilities. So even if you look at it from the material perspective, then also the ability is what is defining to a man. So in this way, this is talking about the essence. The essence of all that exists. Now Krishna will, Krishna's self-identification with matter happens in three chapters in the Bhagavad Gita. Self-identification with matter means, I am the taste of water. Or for that matter, in the 10th chapter, he will say that, I am Indra among the gods. I am Garuda among the birds. Vainateyascha pakshinam. So he does this in three places. So chapter 7, then chapter 10, and then again chapter 15. And all these three self-identifications are actually different. In chapter 7, when he is identifying himself, he is the essence of everything. By essence, we mean the defining essential characteristic, defining characteristic. Here, in 10th chapter, he is saying the best of everything. Vibhuti Yoga. Because among the Devatas, Indra is the best of all the gods. Among the words, Garuda is the best of the world. And in 12th chapter, 16th chapter, it talks about maintainer of everything. Gama Vishya Bhutani Dharyami Amojasa Ushnami Chaushadhi Sarva Somo Bhutvara Satmaka. Actually, it is I who enter into the planets and we keep them afloat. So, there he is talking about how the planets are staying afloat. Similarly, he says, it is I that register fire in man. And I enable everyone to digest. So, he is talking about the maintainers. So, there is the self-identification of Krishna with matter, but each of them has its own context and its own meaning. So, here, the self-identification is primarily to elaborate the second part of 7.7. Sutre Madigana Yoga. How I am the underlying essence of everything, that is what Krishna is talking about over here. Let's move forward now. Punyo Gandha Prithivyamcha
Punyo Gandha Prithivyamcha
Tejas Chasmi Vibhavasau
Tejas Chasmi Vibhavasau
Jeevanam Sarva Bhuteshu
Jeevanam Sarva Bhuteshu
Tapas Chasmi Tapasvishu
Tapas Chasmi Tapasvishu.
So Punyo Gandha Prithivyamcha. So here Punya Gandha, it's a very interesting adjective noun combination. The auspicious fragrance, the sweet, delicious. So actually, sometimes when you see the, or Prabhupada is translated as punya as original over here. So sometimes when the rains fall, the first rain that they fall, when they touch the ground, in the ground is a very sweet fragrance. So again, now people may say that earth itself does not have much of a fragrance. But if we take the seed of a flower, see, we take a seed of a rose, it doesn't have any fragrance, put it on the ground, we pour water on it, water doesn't have any fragrance. From that, a rose comes up. And the rose has an attractive fragrance. So where does the fragrance come from? It actually comes from the earth. So the earth is a reservoir of fragrances. Punyo Gandha Prithivyamcha. Then he says, Tejas Chasmi Vibhavasa. The defining characteristic, the essence of a fire is, it's Teja, it's effulgence, it's splendor. Then all living beings are special because they are living. So I am the life force. So here Krishna is not Mayavad saying I am the Jiva. It is by my arrangement that they have life. Actually, it is I who manifest and make arrangement for their life. And tapas chasmi, tapas vishu. So again, tapasvi, what is the defining characteristic? Tapasya. So, how are they able to do tapasya? Because Krishna gives them the ability to tapasya. Now, when Brahmaji does this tapasya and the Lord appears before him. So then Lord says that actually, I create the world by tapasya, I maintain the world by tapasya. Whatever tapasya you are able to do, you understand that it is my grace. That means that the capacity to tapasya also comes from Krishna. And when the tapasya are able to do great tapasya, that is because Krishna is manifesting his potency for renunciation through them. So this is manifested in the Narayan Rishi also. They manifest the tapasvi capacity. Tapasyasmi tapasvishu. Then Krishna goes forward. Bijam mam sarva bhutanam.
Bijam mam sarva bhutanam.
Vidhi partha sanatanam.
Vidhi partha sanatanam.
Buddhir buddhimatam asmi.
Buddhir buddhimatam asmi.
Tejas tejasvi namaham.
Tejas tejasvi namaham.
So, there are many bijas in this world, but normally when a seed grows into a plant, the seed gets destroyed. But Krishna is the only avyaya bija. He is the bija who is imperishable. The bija that never gets destroyed. So, Om Purnamada Purnam, then Purnat Purnam, Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vashishyate. The Purna is remains. So, Krishna is the Avyaya Bija, imperishable seed, who never gets destroyed. So, he says, he uses the word over Sanatana Bija, Uddhipatha Sanatana. I am the imperishable seed of all existence, eternal seed. And then he is given two more characteristics, that those who are intelligent, their intelligence comes from, I am their intelligence. This is slightly different from when Krishna is in Matasmitra Jnana Upahamcha in 15 chapters. He is talking there about how are you knowledge, are you forgetfulness. But we see some people as intelligent. So that is a defining characteristic. How do they get their intelligence? That is, actually Krishna is the manifestation of that. Krishna is manifesting over that. I am the splendor of the splendid. I am the power of the powerful. Balam balavatam chaham.
Balam balavatam chaham.
Kamaraga vivarjitam.
Kamaraga vivarjitam.
Dharma virutto bhuteshu.
Dharma virutto bhuteshu.
Kamosmi bharatarshabha.
Kamosmi bharatarshabha.
So, here, Krishna is bringing some qualifications over here. So earlier he said, the buddhi of the buddhimatam, I am. But he is not saying here, the bala of all balavatam, I am. I am the bala, which is kama raga vivarjitam, which is not motivated by desire or attachment. That means, kshatriya's power comes from Krishna. Kshatriya's strength manifests Krishna's strength. And when the bards are glorifying Uttu Maharaj in the fourth canto, it says that actually, then later on, Uttu Maharaj is glorified by others also. The Brahmana also praise him. They say that actually, Lord Vishnu is manifesting his force through your powers. Balam balavatam cha ham. So kama raga vivarjitam. Kshatriyas, when they use their power for selfish, attached purposes, he says, I am not that. Although ultimately that power also comes from Krishna. But that is not what is manifested as pleasing to Krishna. And dharma viruddha bhuteshu kamosmi bharatarshava. We discussed this earlier, how Krishna is sex life, that is not contrary to religious principles. So Samacharya also translate this as, I am that ambition which is not irreligious. So kama in general can mean ambition. So ambition, if it is not irreligious, then I am that ambition. So, dharma, artha, kama. There are three purusharthas of life. So when one is striving for kama, one should not give up dharma. So Narada Muni, when meets Yudhishthira in the Mahabharata, is described that a householder, he has to balance these three things. He says, profit, pleasure and religion. So profit is artha, pleasure is kama and religion is artha. So he says, one should not give up religion for the sake of profit or pleasure. One should not give up profit for the sake of religion and pleasure. One should not give up pleasure for the sake of profit and religion. That means a householder has to balance all these three things. What does that mean? That a householder cannot give up his... Yudhishthir and Narada Muni are having a conversation in the Mahabharata. This is different from what is described in the 7th canto of Bhagavata. So there this conversation comes. Narada Muni is instructing Yudhishthir Maharaj. And there he describes that, so if a person is a householder, he has to unite with his wife and give children. He cannot give that up. That's a dharmic duty for him. So that is the pleasure in that also. And a householder cannot say that, I will not earn a living. He has to consider with profit. But he should not get so caught up in profit and pleasure that he neglects religion. So in the Bhagavad Gita first canto, Nidra, what is that verse? Nidraya hiryaktam yavayena chivavaya. Divacha artha haya rajin kutumbharane nava. So there, what are they doing? There is profit and pleasure, but there is no religion over there. Balance profit, pleasure, and religion. So here, Krishna is focusing on dharma aviruddha bhuteshu kamosmi. So for the sake of kama, for the sake of desire, for pleasure, do not go against religion. Then the pleasure that is experienced, that is also a manifestation of me. That pleasure is also purifying. Actually, that is also an way to experience God. So now Krishna will describe, actually, I just give you some examples. But ultimately, I am the essence of everything in material existence. Yechaiva sattvika bhava.
Yechaiva sattvika bhava.
Rajasastamasashchaye.
Rajasastamasashchaye.
Mattaye veti tanvidhi.
Mattaye veti tanvidhi.
Natvaham teshu te mayi.
So this is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna has mentioned the three modes explicitly. Till now, it was in the background what was going on. The Trigun Nishavedan, Trigun Arjuna. The knowledge of the modes was there. But the awareness is there in Vedic culture. But first time Krishna spells them out in the Bhagavad Gita. And he says, whatever is there in whichever mode, it is by my arrangement. Matta evetitanvitti, it is by me. But Matvaham teishu teimai, but don't think that I am lost in that. It is not that I am inside them, it is they are inside me. So, this, why is Krishna adding this qualification? Because Sutra Mani Gana Yuga may lead to that misconception. That God gets exhausted when he gets distributed over the material world. That there is no self-existence of God beyond nature. But that is not the case. In modern philosophy, there is something called process theology. They say there are Christian creationists, there are Christians who try to harmonize with evolution. And they say that the law of evolution is actually God expressing himself through nature. They call it, there is some variant of that is called process theology. But then, is God existing separately from nature? So that may be agreeable with evolution, but according to evolution theory, there is no separate existence of God at all. Nature itself is God. That is not according to any religious tradition. And certainly not according to Vedic tradition. So, matta evetitan vidhi natvaham teishu teimai. They come from me, I don't come from them. They are under me, I am not under them. The three modes are under me. Now, after describing this, Krishna will say, okay, if actually, ultimately, you are the essence of everything. You are pervading not just this few manifesting that you mentioned, but everything that exists. Why are people not able to perceive you? That he describes in the next verse. Tribhir gunamayair bhavair.
Tribhir gunamayair bhavair.
Ebhi sarvamidam jagat. Mohitam nabhi janati.
Mohitam nabhi janati.
Mamebhya paramavayam.
Mamebhya paramavayam.
So, Tribhir gunamayair bhavair. From my the three gunas come and the living entities get covered by it. Mohitam. They get covered by three modes. Na abhijanati. They don't know me. They can't pursue me. So, till now Krishna had talked about how you should realize me. In 2.61 he says, fix your mind on me. But here for the first time it is, why I am not perceived? It is because of the covering of the three modes. And again he is emphasizing that Ma Mebhya Paramavayam. I am beyond these three modes. But it is the living entities who are covered. Mohitam Na Vijanati. So, how do the modes cover everyone? Actually, the modes, they distort our perception. You remember we discussed about these two Shaktis of the Lord? What are the two Shaktis? Avaranatmika and Rakshepatmika. So, how Mohitam Na Abhijanati? So, how did this happen? So, Avaranatmika, it covers our true identity. And Prakshepatmika, it gives us a sense of false identity. They are two distinct energies and they play distinct roles. Avaranatmika means that which is avaran. So it makes us forget that I am a soul, I am a servant of Krishna. And Prakshipatmika makes me think, I am a man, I am an Indian, I am an engineer, I am this, I am that. So we have these two aspects to our illusion. One is forgetfulness of the true identity. Second is the assumption of a false identity. So for example, now if we do some dramas, so when we do dramas, at best what we try to do is, we try to assume another identity. Say somebody may be playing Advaita Acharya, somebody may be Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But at the same time they remember, actually I am so and so. And to the extent actually somebody can forget that, but extent that experience becomes real. So, Maya makes us forget our true identity and gives us a sense of false identity. So as we acquire a false identity, similarly, we acquire a false perception of the world around us. We think the world is for our enjoyment. And in this world, we acquire a false perception of Krishna. There are various false perceptions that are possible. One is that Krishna doesn't exist only. Another is that Krishna exists, but he is maintained, he exists for my enjoyment. That means I want to enjoy in this world, and Krishna should arrange for my enjoyment in this world. So that is the karmakandi understanding. And then another is that, okay, God is a temporary conception by which I have to go beyond this world. So all these are illusions which are created by the Tribhir Gunamaya Bhavai. Now, if Arjuna was asked, Arjuna had this question, why people are not able to see you? Krishna answered that. Then the next was, okay, then how can people see you? He says, how can they become free from the modes? Describes in the next verse. Vyayesha gunamai mama maya duratyaya
mama maya duratyaya
mame vaye prapadyante
mame vaye prapadyante
maya me tam tarantite
maya me tam tarantite.
So again, this verse is having two distinct propositions which are quite connected, but still there are two distinct points. First part is telling, Daivi, divine indeed, is this Gunamayi Maya. This Maya is made of three modes, but it is divine indeed. Daivi, yes, certainly. Divine indeed is. Why is Krishna saying Daivi? Because actually that means, because it is connected with God, it is not possible for us to overcome it. Daivi indeed. Divine indeed it is. And he said, Mama Maya. It's extremely difficult to overcome. And then when they get discouraged, well, that means I'm going to be forever in illusion. No, there is a way to go. If you surrender unto me, then you can go beyond it. So this is the first time in the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna is revealing himself not as an object to be focused or realized, but as an object to be surrendered to. What is the difference between the two? So earlier when Krishna is saying, fix your mind on me, the idea is what? It is, okay, Krishna is a tool for meditation. But when I am saying, fix the mind on me, what is Krishna doing to help me? That is not talked about over there. So there is Krishna as the object of meditation, and then Krishna is the object of surrender. They are two different conceptions. Although even when I want to surrender also, I fix my mind on Krishna. So when Draupadi is calling out to Krishna, she is also fixing her mind on Krishna. But she is not thinking of Krishna as an object, as a concept or a tool to be meditated on. She is thinking of Krishna as a shelter, as a protector, as a deliverer. So this is the first time Krishna is revealing himself in this way. Even when he said, Janma Karma Chenidhi, like when you come to know me, you will become liberated. The onus is on you. You come to know me, then you will become liberated. So, Krishna's Karunya is first time revealed in the Bhagavad Gita in this verse. That Krishna, you have to surrender to him, and in the surrender, you will become liberated. It is the first revelation of that in the Bhagavad Gita. And this will be revealed much more in the future verses. So, this is a very good verse for us to meditate on in the chanting. And the mind starts wondering, this divine indeed is this mind. But actually, Krishna is greater than that. In the Bhagavatam, in the Avanti Brahman section, there is described that the one verse is the God-like power of the mind. The God-like power of the mind. It's a very striking adjective. Because for all practical purposes, for materialistic people, the mind is their God. And the God-like power of the mind can be overcome only by God, not by us. We have to take shelter of it. Then we can go beyond it. So, in this section, Krishna describes his relationship with material energy, how he pervades all material energy, how the material energy covers our perception of him, and how by surrender, we can go beyond. So now the knowledge about Krishna is completed, more or less. Now Krishna describes how different people approach him. So some people surrender to him, some people don't surrender, some people surrender to something else. It is slightly connected with him. So that we will discuss in our future classes. Any question? Yeah, the way Tejas, Tejas Vinamaham and Balam Balavatam Jaham. So the way Shri Prabhupada translates it, it seems similar. If you go back to Sanskrit, teja refers to splendor. So I am the splendor of the splendor. So Krishna is talking about, if anybody has any glorious quality, teja. Teja can, at the literal sense, it can mean effulgence. So I am the effulgence of the effulgent. Or effulgence can be the literal effulgence that comes from the body. Or it can be effulgence which a person has because of certain qualities. So that means Krishna is talking in that sense. Vishnu Prabhupada translates it, Prabhupada equates it more or less. But there is a technical difference between the two. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.